The Tom Woods Show, episode 2194.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, we all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. We're talking about cars today, but you don't have to be a quote-unquote car guy to find this stuff important. It's one of the various ways in which the people who hate us are trying to make people's lives miserable. So we got to talk about it. And joining us to talk about it is, of course, Eric Peters, who runs ericpetersautos.com or epautos.com. I support him every month, and I hope you will check out the work that he does. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Tom. Thanks for having me on again.
All right. Well, we have some news to catch up on. Let's start with one that I think most people saw in the news last week, and that is about California. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that by 2035, could I possibly be understanding this correctly? You can't sell a gas-powered automobile in that state?
That's correct. The manufacturers will not be permitted to sell new cars that are not electric cars at that date.
I can still sell my old car to somebody.
That's correct.
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. For now, though, of course, I think probably they'll alter that too, per Darth Vader. Take care, I do not alter our bargain.
Yeah, yeah. So talk to me about this. I mean, I've seen somebody say, in fact, I think it was Gene Epstein, say, what's happening here is, first of all, California's full of crazy people. But also, this is one of these typical things that they push off for 13 years, which gives politicians time to then push it off another 5 or 10. So maybe it won't actually go into effect. But whether it does or it doesn't, it certainly has a chilling effect on the automobile industry. And of course, it makes ordinary people wonder if they'll still be able to afford to live in California after all the different ways. It seems like every other week there's a different way life is made more expensive in California.
Yeah.
So I think it adds to the exodus from California. And I don't know what it does for the automobile industry in terms of what they want to do. I guess they're also seeing the writing on the wall, but this is pretty fast what they're asking for here. So, I mean, use your crystal ball here. What do you think will happen?
Well, I don't need a crystal ball. It's not merely political. It's determinative in the sense that the car companies have to plan for future product. So, for example, right now, they're currently developing the vehicles that they anticipate will be available in car showrooms in about 4 years. That's the duration of a typical, what they call, product planning cycle. So, you know, given that they have to plan for the future, they're looking at what's going on in California and thinking, well, are we going to commit millions and millions of dollars in R&D to developing new cars that aren't electric cars, which we will be prohibited from selling? And bear in mind, too, that this isn't just California. California has become the de facto standard setter for the entire country. They have a regulatory body called CARB, the California Air Resources Board, that dictates what may or may not be sold within the state of California. You and I are probably old enough to remember when they had California cars and then 49 state cars. And for a while that worked. The car companies would be able to make minor modifications to a given model that would be then for sale in California only. And then the rest of the country would get cars that didn't have these gimps and afflictions that California had imposed. Problem is, it's gotten really expensive for them to do that. So rather than make two different sets of cars for two different markets, they make a single car that complies with the California standards. So in effect, what CARB decrees winds up becoming national policy for all of us.
So this is a real thing.
A very real thing.
So what, are we all just stuck? Is there no one who's going to stand up and say, we don't want this? There's just no one with any power anywhere who can stop it?
Well, I think a lot of us don't want it. The problem is we don't have a lot of representation, do we? And I think there's another factor driving this, which is general unawareness of the realities of electric cars, because the media has done an atrocious job, as always, of presenting both the pros and the cons. You know, I often get accused of being anti-electric car, and that's not true. I'm opposed to the forcing of them, but I'm also opposed to not being honest about them and explaining to people that these things do have cons, including their high cost including the time that you'll have to spend waiting for recharging and planning your day and your life around recharging, shorter life of the vehicle because of the shorter life of the battery, and so on. It's not being explained to people, and they've been able to get away with this for a long time because electric cars, for most people, are an abstract. The current market penetration is somewhere between 1% and 3% nationally, depending on where you live. So most people, most Americans, have never driven an electric car. They really have no idea what they're being set up for.
Why would you, Eric Peters, specifically not drive an electric car?
Well, there are both, there are objective and subjective reasons. I find electric cars, this is my subjective and personal reasons, to be about as exciting as a microwave oven. They're all the same, an electric motor, just a different shaped body on a skate. It doesn't have any emotional grab for me. I don't like them on a personal level, and I personally wouldn't buy one for that reason. But then there are objective reasons. I like the fact that I can just jump in my truck or my car whenever I need to without having to plan for it, go anywhere I like, even if wherever I like is 1,000 miles away, without having to think about, well, okay, is my battery charged up? Have I got a couple of hours to charge it? What am I going to do when I run out of charge halfway there? Am I going to stay at the Quality Inn or my buddy's house? What am I going to do? It complicates life. You know, think about how most people, when they go through a drive-through, let's say for a burger or for a cup of coffee, or they go to the bank, they want to transact their business quickly. We're a fast-paced society. People like to get things done. And I find it inconceivable that people are going to exchange the convenience, the ease of use of a car they can refuel in less than 5 minutes anywhere for an electric car that's going to take them a minimum of 30 to 45 minutes to partially recharge at one of these so-called fast chargers. I always get a kick out of, they call it fast. It's at least five times as long as it takes to fill up your gas-powered car. And you have to go there to do it. It's not like you can fast charge at home. That's another thing that the media has been extremely remiss in explaining to people. Home wiring systems are not designed to instill 400 to 800 volts of current into an electric car battery. The fastest that you can charge an electric car at home is 8 to 11 hours, depending on the vehicle. So people really ought to think about that before they buy into all of this.
Well, it looks like we're not going to have much choice at some point unless something dramatic changes. I guess it's just demoralizing living in a world where it seems like you just have to sit back and let things happen to you.
Well, isn't it? We're literally in the position of a pate de foie gras goose. You know, they stick the funnel down the poor goose's throat and they cram food in there so as to fatten him up. And that's essentially how I feel about it. And the tragedy is that if the market had been allowed to operate, you and I are Austrian guys, we believe in the free market, the incentive would have been to make electric cars more affordable and more practical than combustion engine cars. And ironically, they have those kinds of electric cars. And of all places, China. In China, you can pick up a $5,000 electric car. Now, it doesn't have 300-mile range. It doesn't have ludicrous speed. But it's perfect for knocking around in the city. You know, if you have a job that's 5 or 10 miles down the road and you live in an apartment, it's perfect. And it's great for kids, you know, people coming out of high school and college. Hey, you know, brand new vehicle for $5,000, that would be a boon. I'm all for that. But because of the perverse incentives that have been put into place, we end up with, you know, Tesla is the archetype. They sell speed and technology. They're high performance luxury sport cars that happen to be electric with a typical transaction price of more than $50,000. Where do they think people are going to be able to come up with the money to pay for that?
Well, that's kind of the thing I'm thinking about, that when you see something like this, the forced introduction of electric cars that leads to higher prices for average people. For example, you also see it just in energy more generally, that if they're going to try to do away with fossil fuels, that means much more expensive, much less reliable energy. Everybody knows that. And we all know that that's going to devastate the developing world too. It can't be that that just happened by accident or whatever. I mean, it has to be, to me, it has to be that this is actually, for them, one of the features of it. That in the case of cars, let's remember that there have been quite a few people who, honestly, if you really were to push them, don't like the idea of everybody having a car.
Well, that's right.
You run across that on social media all the time, that we should be using public transportation, the masses should huddle together in some hideous bus or something and be carted around. Of course, our betters will drive around in their cars. But the fact that it'll become very difficult for the average person to afford a car without going into some kind of ridiculous debt arrangement, this can't just be an accidental byproduct. This is a great feature because it means there will be fewer cars for ordinary people that the elites despise.
Absolutely correct.
I'm tired of trying to find some benign explanation for the things they do and saying, well, you know, let's assume the best on the part of these people. These people long ago forfeited the right to have the best assumed of them.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's been their advantage for decades. You know, they've been at this now for a long time. And they have been able to play off, I think, the normal instinct that most people have is to assume that other people are well-intended. They may be wrong, but, you know, hey, you know, they mean well. They're trying to do the right thing, you know? And this reaches its ultimate apotheosis in the awful pictures that we can recall from the World War II era when you'd see Jewish people with their suitcases waiting to get on the boxcars because it was inconceivable to them, you know, what was planned for them. Oh, no, we're just being relocated to the East. But once you grasp that these people are not well-intended, that they are malignant, they have bad motives, and they have not got our best interests in mind, then a lot of this stuff really begins to make sense. And you don't have to attribute it any longer to just, oh, they're incompetent. Oh, they're stupid. It's not that at all.
Let's shift gears now, so to speak, and let's go to your piece, The Six-Figure V8. And I'll link to this stuff that we've been talking about at tomwoods.com/2194. These are pieces that are taken from ericpetersautos.com or epautos.com. Now, I want you to talk as if your audience in this case is, in effect, dumb guys like me. Because when it comes to cars, I'm just a dumb guy. I don't know how they work. I don't know anything about them. All I know is how they look and feel to me. That's all I care about. It's not that I don't care. It's just that I have so many competing things for my time that I've never really gotten around to this. So when you write a piece about V8 engines becoming almost prohibitively expensive to the point where they're just unavailable to the average person, can you break that down? We talk about a V6, a V8. What do these things mean?
Well, it means prestige for one thing. I was prompted to do this piece as I was test driving the current Mercedes S-Class. I have it outside. I get a new car to test drive each week. And as people may know or may not know, the S-Class is Mercedes' top-of-the-line car. It's a full-size luxury sedan, and it's a six-figure car. And I looked at the window sticker and the product information, and wow, this thing comes standard with, drumroll, a V6 engine. And I got to thinking, you know, used to be the case that if you bought a $50,000 car, for that matter, a $30,000 car, you got a V6 engine. Now, the $50,000 cars come with four-cylinder engines like economy cars used to come with, and the high-end luxury cars come with V6 engines. A handful of them, you can get a V8 if you pay even more money for it, and it's sort of equivalent to shrinkage in food. You know, you go out and buy a frozen burrito. Let's say I was at the store the other day, and this happened to me. There's a particular brand of burritos that I like, and the package looks the same. The size is the same, but when you get it home, you find out there's about half of the burrito is gone. They've downsized the product, and this is what's happening with cars. They are downsizing the engines, and it's not because of market demand. It's because of government demand. This regulatory apparatus that is functioning as a legislative body issues these regulations having to do with things like emissions and fuel economy that are increasingly difficult, if not impossible, to comply with without making engines smaller and smaller to the point where they disappear. And presto, only electric cars are left. Now, why does it matter? Well, if I paid $100,000 for a premium vehicle, I'd be kind of disappointed to see that I got what used to be common in cars like Honda Accords and Toyota Camrys that you could pick up for, you know, $28,000. So again, it's a diminishment. It's of a piece with all of the diminishments that we're being made to suffer as a result of these policies.
How does this whole move toward electric vehicles apply to motorcycles? I actually don't even know. I've never heard anything discussed about that.
Well, that's like the last readout because, you know, unlike cars, you know, cars, by and large, most people view them as an appliance. It's a necessary appliance. It's something that you pretty much have to have unless you are somebody who lives in a city, right? So, you know, you get it and you judge it by the same standards that you would judge a computer or any other appliance. But motorcycles are different. You know, people choose to ride bikes because they're passionate about the machinery. And this idea of an electric motorcycle is not going to work because it's not a motorcycle. By definition, a motorcycle has an engine, it has a transmission that you shift through the gears, and that whole mechanical experience is the defining essence of a motorcycle. If you put an electric motor in it, it just goes whirr, and all you do is rotate the right grip. What you have then is a scooter or a moped, not a motorcycle. Harley tried to introduce an electric motorcycle. It's called the Livewire. And it's proved to be a disaster, a dead wire. Nobody wants it. You know, it's never going to happen. So what they're going to end up doing probably is to force us clingers. I'm a biker. I've got four bikes myself, to give them up because, of, after all, we can't allow people to have these things since they're changing the climate.
You know, there are so many issues that a half-decent politician could run on where the average person's life is about to be made much, much worse. And yet, there are still Mitt Romneys in the world. There's still, you know, I have a guy I've had on the show a couple times, or at least once, Anthony Sabatini. Mm-hmm. He's in the Florida House of Representatives. He was running for U.S. Congress. And he lost in the primary, to my surprise, to basically a swamp creature who was voted for by boomers who are still convinced by TV commercials telling them, don't vote for this other guy because the people who screw you every single MFing day don't like that guy. Yeah. You should vote for this one. And they say, okay, I'll go vote for this one. God bless America. I mean, it's so irritating because a guy like Sabatini would have tried to stop all of this. Now, would he have succeeded? I don't know. But like, even the people whose noses are being ground into the dirt aren't alert enough. If the boomers are going to fail us this badly, it's frustrating.
Yeah, well, one of the great ironies is the shift of the Democrat Party from kind of a populist party, a party that, you know, the core of the Democrat Party was working class people, unions, all of that sort of thing, to becoming the man. They are the party of the establishment, of the elites, of the people in San Francisco and Washington who are massively affluent, not through usually their own merit, but through the influence that they can peddle. And on the other side, you know, there's this desperate, desperate desire among conservatives and Republicans for someone to come forward. And I think that's part of the reason why Trump was so massively popular despite all of his defects, because he at least sounded like maybe at last, here's somebody who cares or gives a damn about the plight of the average person in this country.
All right. So now we talked about, so look, is there anything good? I mean, in your area of the world, mm-hmm. it's really hard to find good signs. I can find little bits and pieces because my area is literally every possible topic, you know, because you are going to find some good news somewhere here and there. But geez, in this area of transportation, I hate to reduce it to such an antiseptic word as that. Anything we can be happy about?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me. All right.
Yeah. One of the big things is there is a burgeoning underground now in maintaining and preserving, not classic cars. You know, I've got an antique car that sits in the garage most of the time, and it's what you call a garage queen. It doesn't go out if it's going to rain. You know, it's not transportation. It's kind of industrial art for me. But I'm talking about keeping up these older vehicles that don't have all the latest technology and that aren't electric, figuring out ways to just keep them going, kind of like they do in Cuba. You know, you look at Cuba and you see these cars from the 40s and 50s that they're still using every day because that's what they've got to work with. And that is happening here. And we have the advantage that the Cubans didn't have to an extent that was never possible before, being able to make some critical parts at home, you know, using these CNC machines and CAD design that used to be prohibitively expensive for an ordinary person to get, but they're not anymore. So, you know, there is a way to keep these things going. And a lot of people have just decided, I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep my older vehicle going and just forget about the new car business. And, you know, if that's a good thing, if they can't force people to get these electric cars and to go into debt forever for them, it will have to change. You know, at some point, there's going to have to be some kind of reformation. And they'll have to get back to offering vehicles that actually appeal to the market rather than the government.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm just trying to imagine, I realize this is not the worst of the problems, but I'm trying to imagine a world in which the great Eric Peters has his yearly testing of cars and they're all the same damn car.
Sure, I dread it. You know, I can foresee this happening. As this elaborates, you know, if it does elaborate the way it appears to be elaborating, and we end up with probably just a handful of car companies, because after all, why bother having a dozen different car companies making the same electric car with a different badge on the fender? You know, fundamentally, they're all the same. It used to be, you know, you bought a Porsche, let's say, because the Porsche had a rear engine and it made a particular noise that was appealing and you liked it because it was a Porsche. Now, when it becomes an electric skate and it's like every other electric skate, who cares? So anyway, you know, that's going to stop, I think, eventually. Or if it doesn't, I'm going to just have to become a political ranter and review old cars, I suppose, which is okay. You know, we'll do what we have to do.
Tell me if there are any other news items recently that you've been keeping up on that we should know about. I knew about the things we've talked about up to now, but what else is going on in the world?
There's a very, very interesting thing that percolated up the other day on the other side of the world in China, where they're having an energy crunch, an electric energy crunch. They've had to turn off a number of the Tesla superchargers. People have probably heard that term. These are the places where you go to plug in an electric car and get it fast charged. Well, anyway, they've got a capacity problem because there's been a drought and a lot of their power, I think it's 80 to 85% is hydroelectric. And the demand for just ordinary things, you know, like home AC, commercial use, and so on, is already high enough that when you add the electric car charging to the mix, it doesn't work. There's simply not enough capacity. That problem is going to come to America. I think people really need to understand that. The regulatory apparatus has made it extraordinarily difficult to build any new generating capacity in this country. And yet they are attempting to force into service potentially hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of these extremely high draw electric vehicles that the grid will not be able to support. They've come out publicly in California, I think Washington State, also a number of other places saying to expect brownouts, expect energy rationing because of this.
I know I'm supposed to respond, but I'm sitting here just thinking, just 10 years ago, I remember I felt like I had plenty of grounds for complaint, but I didn't feel like every time I turned around, there was some borderline catastrophe about to occur.
Sure.
You know, and I always thought, well, there will be catastrophes eventually, but they're going to be in the future. And now, doggone it, we're in that future.
Well, remember what Lenin said? I'm going to probably mutilate this somewhat. He said something to the effect of, usually nothing changes for a long time, and then suddenly everything changes. And I think that's apt. I think we've been able to kind of, most of us, I'm speaking here generally, most of us have been able to kind of ignore these minor infringements, you know, another tax here, a little inconvenience there, a couple $100 or a few $1,000 added to the car. But a cumulative effect occurs, and eventually you get to this critical mass where the dam bursts and everything just becomes untenable. And I think everybody understands that it's becoming untenable. And we now live in this surreal, it's like the movie Brazil, this Kafkaesque, bizarro world where nothing makes sense anymore. And the only good thing about that is that kind of system cannot go on for much longer.
That's the way I think. And I mean, of course, I thought that the COVID stuff couldn't go on for much longer in June of 2020. Now, eventually it did stop. So I suppose that is something to be happy about. So I guess the answer is it went on longer than I thought it would or should.
Mm-hmm.
But it did ultimately unravel. Now, there's still way, way too much of it. There are still places demanding that you have to get the vaccine in order to work here, which is incredible to me that at this point, you're still on this? After everything we know now, you're still on this? It's unbelievable to me.
But the narrative is breaking down and people are beginning to ask questions. And this is salutary.
Yes.
You know, I think that once you get a critical mass of probably 20% or so of the population that says, you know what, I'm not buying it. I'm sorry, unless you provide me with a rational answer and can answer these questions in a way that makes sense, I'm just not going to buy it. And I think that that scales. I think that the climate change thing is really, it's a corollary of this whole thing with COVID. It's something where a threat has been manufactured and hystericized deliberately to impart panic and fear in people, to get them to submit and obey to things that would otherwise be inconceivable. And I think maybe people are going to start to question this whole climate thing too. You know, this idea, it's not a question about, you know, is the climate changing? Okay, well, maybe it is, but is it catastrophic? Okay. And if it's catastrophic, is it something that's due to motor vehicles? We need to have the answers to that before we destroy our society because somebody says, we better do it. We better do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I think there's a much, much better chance now that people will start questioning the climate stuff for two reasons. One, because it sounds an awful lot like the COVID BS.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfalsifiable. They want to suppress dissident voices. It just happens to justify their total control of society. I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, how stupid. Well, I know how stupid they think we are. Obviously, pretty darn stupid. So that, I think, is going to help. And also, secondly, just the overreach with it.
Absolutely.
And they're going way, way, way crazy overboard at this point with the things they're demanding of people. That's only going to get crazier. So they are opening up the opportunity or the inevitability of a backlash of some sort. It just has to be.
I think so. There's another corollary here, too, I think, and it is the open contempt of the people who are pushing it for the hoi polloi, you know, people like you and I. The same thing, you know, you'd see the elites not wearing those masks, gathering together, not socially distanced. You know, people can see that. It's tangible. And they can see Leonardo DiCaprio hopping on his private jet, you know, to go somewhere to complain about climate change. And it's insolent, you know, and they're so tone deaf, they don't even begin to, I guess, grasp how they're perceived by, you know, the people that they're hurting. And I think a lot of people have finally had enough of it.
I want to remind everybody that I see it coming out every month. I have a monthly contribution I make to epautos.com because in the world of cars, as in so many other worlds, like, for example, sports reporting, they all went for the COVID stuff. I mean, it's just everywhere you look, the standard voices are all singing from the same hymn book. And the same goes true for cars. I know in the poker world, I've talked to people who play poker. A lot of them went for the, well, we better not play poker in person. The whole thing, they all went for it. But there are these dissident voices. And I think Eric is pretty much the only guy we have who's a sound, solid, just rock solid libertarian, also who just has an enormous knowledge when it comes to cars. And even though I personally am not a quote unquote car guy, I see the value in what he's doing. So I support him because I want Eric to do what he's doing. I personally think you should make it easier for people to give you more money than you do. But, you know, that's your decision, not mine. But the website is epautos.com. I'm not saying everybody who listens has to send money to Eric, although I don't think he'd be unhappy if you did that. But at the very least, check out what he's doing and spread the word about it because it's really important. And the sooner the people understand what's really happening, the sooner this great renaissance of automobiles and normality can be realized. So, Eric, I appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Tom. That was very kind of you. And, you know, this isn't just about cars. It's really mobility is a synonym in my mind for freedom, you know, the
yes.
freedom to move. You know, without the ability to move, what kind of freedom have you got? And I think that's why our freedom to move is under attack.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And again, I'm thinking 10 years ago, I would have said, well, maybe they sincerely believe X or Y. And I think maybe some of their followers sincerely believe X or Y. But I no longer believe a word they say. I no longer believe their motives. I no longer believe they're just somewhat misled. And if I could just send them a couple of books, I could change their mind. That's over. They forfeited that a long time ago. And now we have to proceed as if they are operating against our interests at every turn. And we have to organize and figure out a way to stop them from doing it. So,
yeah, I agree. And I'd go one step farther too, with regard to people on our side of the political aisle, let's say somebody who's running for an office. It's all well and good to mouth the right sounding words, but I think it's imperative that we judge them on how they act, what they do, as opposed to what they talk about. And if they do not act, if they shrink, if they behave in a poltroonish, accommodationist, insider Washington kind of a way, then be done with them and move on to the next one.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. From your lips to God's ear. Well, thank you, Eric Peters, Eric, how would I describe you? The founder, the creator, the chief author, the publisher of ericpetersautos.com. I don't know what your official title is. All those things.
I'm a one pony show. Yep.
Yeah. You are ericpetersautos.com. So everybody go check that out. I'll have links up at tomwoods.com/2194, but you can bypass all those. Just go directly to the source. You can also use as a shorthand epautos.com. Thanks, Eric. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, tomorrow, our old friend Carla Garrick is back on the show. We're going to talk about what's going on in New Hampshire, where, let's say, some of our people are getting in trouble for talking about secession. You're not supposed to talk about that. That's treason, blah, 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 blah. Well, we're going to have to hash that out tomorrow. So join me for that. And if you like and appreciate the old Tom Woods Show, check out supportinglisteners.com and become part of the Tom Woods Show elite. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.